Speakers for the invitation, and there will be 5 more minutes after the talk, I guess. So this talk is basically a review talk about the recent progress in the studies of very cold and dense quark matter. So it kind of stands out compared to the talks that we've heard in the first few days of this workshop, because here we are going in the direction of very large bearing chemical potential and very small temperatures. That's the part of the phase diagram, of course, which is very hard to do with the lattice calculations, although there are some attempts in that direction too. So here's my brief outline of what I'm going to talk about. Most importantly, I give you some basic introduction where this is motivated, where this whole direction is motivated, then some basic ideas about the color superconductivity, the exotic states, the superconducting exotic states of matter in stars, overview of the current ideas about the problems that exist there, and I'll give a very, very brief summary. So the main motivation for studying dense baryonic matter at low temperatures, of course, comes from the existence of very compact stars, the usually known as neutron stars. They have typical radius in the range of 10 kilometers or so. The mass is in some range between 1.2 to 2 solar masses. Notice that this existence of this wide range is extremely important for being able to explore different possibilities of different densities of baryonic matter. Then they have some other macroscopic properties that we could extract directly, such as period, or indirectly, as in the case of the surface magnetic fields. The typical temperatures for the core in such stars would be in the range between 10 MeV if you go chronologically from the first born stars to about 10 keV for the old stars. Of course, this is just coming from the model estimates. The basic idea is, what is the state of matter at the core of neutron stars, or at the core of these compact stars? And in fact, when we go from outside in, we do know a little bit about the state of matter at low baryonic densities. Well, simply from the fact that we could observe not so very dense baryonic matter in the lab, starting from something as nuclei. But as soon as we go deeper and deeper inside the compact star, our predictive power decreases. And in fact, all the way at the center, there are many different suggestions what there could be. But in fact, we don't really know what there is there. In fact, the simplest possibility is that there is nothing really exotic there. Simply, we have nuclear matter, which is composed mostly of the proton and neutrons with a small mixture of electrons and possibly muons. But nothing really more than that. There are some ideas which go back to 70s and 80s about the possibility of some condensates or mesons there, like pine condensates, cane condensates. In fact, some of them are nearly excluded on some, based on some argument, but really they are still viable. The part of the lower left part of this slice of the compact star is the so-called strange star, really. Because here, the quark matter extends all the way, or nearly all the way, to the surface. That would be the most likely possibility if we have the absolutely stable strange quark matter. Here, I really added also some possibilities of non-strange quark matter. And in principle, in that case, of course, it doesn't have to be that this quark core is such so large. It could be much less, of course. But basically, this is one of the possibilities, that at very large densities, we deconfine matter, we get quark matter, and that is part of the physics of compact stars. And now the idea is, how do we actually go and explore that? From the theoretical point of view, we are simply talking about the different regions in the phase diagram. In the phase diagram, in the plane of temperature, and their chemical potential. So you all know well that the region that is probed by the heavy ion collisions is the region of small bearing chemical potential and relatively large temperature, maybe in the range of hundreds mega electron volts. That's the scale here. So that we've heard quite a bit about from different speakers, so I'm not going to spend much time about that. Also, this same basically part of the phase diagram is probed, if you could say probed in this sense, by the physics of the early universe, because when the early universe cools down, it has relatively very low bearing chemical potential, rather high temperature, and then in the end, when we get to normal matter, we have to end up with baryons. That's where the baryons would appear. Finally, the other region which can be probed in the universe, in nature, is the region of very low densities and low temperatures and large densities. This is basically the region of the compact stars. And that's basically the region of the phase diagram which I'm going to concentrate on. Now, this phase diagram, it has to be taken with a grain of salt, because in fact all these lines are obtained in some very naive model, and the only purpose for showing this phase diagram is to make the point that the phase diagram in this region should be extremely complicated. And of course that should not be surprising if you know the phase diagram of water in the plane of temperature and pressure. At very large pressure and low temperature you have many different phases, many different phases of ice. And the reason is for those phases that you could have many ordered phases without creating a lot of entropy. And that's essentially the reason for having those many phases in the case of baryon large baryon chemical potential low temperature. So what do we know about very dense baryonic matter? Well, starting very naively, you could simply take baryonic matter, well, nuclear matter, first, those would be the protons and neutrons, and you start to squeeze it really hard without putting a lot of temperature. So, of course, because of the overlap of those baryons, eventually you should be able to talk about the quark matter. You could think of this as a bag model calculation. First, you have the bags which do not overlap. Then, after at very large density, they simply start to overlap, and the quarks are shared between different bags. So they basically propagate to large distances, and this is nothing else but confinement. Of course, more theoretically, it simply comes from the fact that we have asymptotic freedom in QCD, which means that when the quarks have very close distances, that the average distance between the quarks is very small, then the typical exchange momentum will be large when they scatter, and because of the asymptotic freedom, they will be weakly interacting quarks. So not only we are going to get the quark matter, but in fact we expect that this quark matter will be weakly interacting. So this is the idea which goes back to Collins and Perry. Of course, saying that, you should step a little bit back and say that, well, at realistic densities that you actually achieve in stars, you cannot have weakly interacting matter. The hydrostatic equilibrium of matter inside the stars simply prohibits you from going to densities larger than about 10 times the saturation density given here. And what that means, well, if we try to squeeze it harder, basically, it goes to the black hole. So what that means is that the actual average distance between the quarks, this is kind of the inverse quantity of that, the baryon chemical potential, will be not so large. And in fact, again, using this plot that somebody showed before, you could guess immediately that the coupling cannot be really weak in this regime. So in fact, we do have probably strongly interacting, or at least moderately strongly interacting matter, even if it is deconfined quark matter. Now, what is the ground state of the matter if we really go to very large densities? The game here is to get some information about extremely dense regions and then try to extrapolate the idea to a moderate density regime. So, in fact, we do know that the quarks are fermions. The temperature is low. They try to occupy all the lowest energy states. And that's basically what it is. We add quarks. They try to occupy new states in the momentum space. And until we use all the quarks available, we could pull them, put them there and reach some specific density. So the larger the size of that sphere in the momentum space, the larger is the density in the real space. Now, that would be something similar to the Fermi liquid model, because we simply have some particles at the highest values of momentum, and then there will be an occupied state. So you could easily excite the particles from the highest occupied states to the next available states, and those will be the lowest energy excitations, and this is essentially the Fermi liquid idea. And all those excitations will be fermions. So basically, that would be a good starting point to start to discuss quark matter if it were not for the attraction between the quarks. And in fact, the quarks do attract, and there is an attractive channel which is antisymmetric in color. And because of that attraction, the Fermi liquid state will not be stable. This is the Cooper theorem that everybody knows from the solid state physics. So because of that instability of the Fermi sphere, the system will try to rearrange, and in fact you get Kallis superconduction. Well, if you didn't know that this were quarks, you would simply say we must have a superconductor, as in metals and alloys. But in fact, quarks can carry color, so we simply call it Kallis superconductor. Now, a little bit about a simple example of a Kallis superconductor. Assume that you have two different quark flavors, up quarks and down quarks in the system. They all come in three colors. And what will be the corresponding Cooper pair? If we were talking about electrons, of course, it's very easy. We take electrons with equal in magnitude momenta, opposite direction. We simply take two of those electrons, and they would attract due to fermions. That would be basically the Cooper pair. In this case, the situation is even nicer and more beautiful because we don't have any fermions, and we don't need any of them. The quarks are attracted by the gluons, and in fact, that attraction, as I just said a second ago, is antisymmetric in color. That's the attractive channel. So we take a wave function which is antisymmetric in those two indices, in the color index. We want to create the spin zero state, which is typically the strongest attractive channel if it's possible. And because of the anti-symmetry of the wave function under the exchange of all the indices, of course it should be anti-symmetric in flavor. So this is simply coming from the Pauli principle. So this would be the structure of the simplest wave function. We have to take the quarks of different flavor, different color, and the spin up and spin down as usual, and you get a spin zero Cooper pair, and then if the temperature is low enough, those Cooper pairs will condense and you get a superconductor. Now, although this ground state is a superconductor, and although the quarks carry electrical charge, it turns out to be that this superconductor is not a regular electromagnetic superconductor. The simplest way to understand that is to think of the electroweak theory when you have the breaking of the original U1 symmetry, but in the end you still have a photon. Basically, that's the same thing what happens here, that there will be a combination of the color and original electromagnetic, vacuum electromagnetic transformation, which is unbroken in the ground state. Also, in a very similar fashion, there will be unbroken U1 variant.
Yes, performance of electric area, of course, we have a new photon, and that's it. Yes. Yes. Here we can have a globe of this material, and this outside.
Right.
So outside we have this photon. So yes. Depending, if we put it into ordinary magnet, it will still fly.
No. I don't think it
because,
will.
Because it has Master's Field inside, but this is not the same as Master's Field outside.
Right, but the thing is, I'm not sure if you would have enough currents outside and if those currents would be appropriate to fly your system.
Yeah, that's there. Yeah. I don't speak about that.
Right. Anyway. In fact, that was kind of like the toy model to start with. But of course, in real life, it could be much more complicated. You could have the pairing between the quarks of the same flavor, different flavors. You could have different number of flavors in the system. And then, of course, you could have many, many different possibilities for color superconductors. So there are superconductors which would be made of a single flavor, so only the quarks of the same flavor, like up, up, or down and down, will pair. Of course, using that same argument I just had a second ago, you would immediately appreciate that this cannot be a spin zero Hooper pair. So in fact, the only possibility is to have spin one superconductors. And again, because of this spin one, there is a lot of different complications happening, and you could have still many different spin one color superconductors. They typically, at least if you have two flavors and both of those two different flavors pair, and those two flavors have different charge as the U and D quark do have, then these systems will be superconductors in a usual sense. They would have Meissner effect, and they would show superfluidity. Of course, the two flavor cases was that simple example I just discussed. There is no either of these two. And there is also a very beautiful example of three flavor color superconductivity when all the quarks participate in pairing, and it has extremely nice symmetry properties. Again, it's not a Meissner superconductor in the usual sense, but it does have superfluidity. Now, you might say, why I didn't go to more number of the quarks. We do have six quarks in the game originally. The thing is that the other three quarks which are left out, that they are much heavier. And in fact, the condition for the quarks to appear in the system for the given quark flavor I, the condition is that the corresponding chemical potential is larger than its mass. And if you remember, I mentioned that the corresponding chemical potentials in neutron stars would be at most in the range of 500 MeV, which is well below the next heaviest quark. So the other three quarks are simply out of the game. Now, the conditions in stars are not that simple as I was trying to pretend a second ago. In fact, it's much more complicated because of specifics of the neutron star. Well, you could think of a neutron star as a nucleus of the size of 10 kilometers. So we are talking about the interplay between the microscopic QCD physics and the macroscopic physics, which is due to gravity and other forces as well. Here, in particular, the other forces I have in mind are electromagnetism and weak interactions. So because of the electromagnetism, we do have to make sure that the matter in this macroscopic ball of the 10 kilometer size should be electrically neutral. If you are trying to pretend that you could put some average small density, very small but not zero density, you would find immediately that the Coulomb energy grows faster than the volume of the system. And in fact, for the typical charge density in two-flavor superconductor, you would find that that energy is 10 to 26 orders of magnitude larger than the rest mass of the sun. So you could imagine how much energy price you would put there if you try to avoid this condition. So that is completely unavoidable. You have to make sure that the system is at least on average neutral. And on average means on microscopic distances neutral. Also, the system should be in beta equilibrium. Actually, it will be in beta equilibrium no matter what you want. The thing is, and that condition is simply given by the relation between the corresponding chemical potential of the chemical potentials of the quarks and the electron. So imagine for a second that you have fewer d quarks than the number required by this condition. That is simply given here by the occupation of the states of the d quarks. So if you have too few D quarks, and in this picture it simply means that if we put two of these columns on top of each other, they will be up to that highest point, but the chemical potential of the D quarks is less than that, then you could easily appreciate that you could combine these two particles, one up quark and one electron, putting them together, it will cause less energy to go to the level of the Fermi surface of the D quark. And of course, this will be happening until you reach the condition of beta equilibrium. Indeed, if you try to go a little bit more than that and occupy more D quarks, so in this case, you have the two columns, the size of these two columns, less than the value of the chemical potential of the D quarks, then those D quarks will prefer energetically, prefer to decay into two of these other particles, and then you decrease the energy. And this will be happening until you reach the perfect beta equilibrium. And of course, we are talking about the microscopic processes, weak processes. And we have basically macroscopic times, and this will be happening really very fast on those macroscopic scales. So we have no choice but make sure that that condition is satisfied. Now, what does it mean in terms of the physics for the Cooper pairing and the Kalla superconductivity? Well, the bottom line is that all the Fermi momenta of the quarks which could appear in the system, they will be all different. That's the bottom line. Well, you could actually easily see that from this simple expression, that for the massless quarks, the Fermi momenta are roughly the same as the chemical potential, and for the strange quark, there is this difference due to the mass of the strange quark. So what that means, of course, that you cannot avoid stressing the Cooper pairing, which means that you have this mismatch between two Fermi momenta of the pairing quarks, and then you want to try the same game, try to pair the D quarks with the up quarks, and now this value of the momentum is different from that value of the momentum. Actually, there is a typo. This is not the same P, as you could see clearly. And of course, then you have to ask yourself, what will be the ground state in this case? What will happen? Well, this was roughly the question that we asked ourselves several years ago, and there is no unique answer. In fact, it does depend on the parameters in the model. Roughly speaking, the game is between the two main players. The mismatch between the chemical potentials of the quarks, which is essentially given by the condition of neutrality condition, and the other player is the strength of the Cooper pair. So that is conveniently parameterized by these two parameters. Delta zero is the size of the superconducting gap in the absence of the mismatch, and the mismatch itself. So when the pairing is very weak, that means that the gap is very small in the absence of the mismatch. When you put the mismatch, basically nothing happens in the system. The pairing will not be possible simply because of that mismatch. You could imagine that that mismatch is arbitrarily large and the gap delta zero is arbitrarily small. And then, of course, it's absolutely obvious. There is nothing else but the normal phase. Well, there is an opposite limit, of course, when the mismatch is finite and basically fixed by the density, overall density of matter, but you crank up the strength of the parent. Of course, at some point, you could make it so strong that it would overcome any kind of finite mismatches, and you get what I would call usual superconductivity. That is pretty straightforward. Now, the most interesting, of course, is the case, which is kind of in the middle. It's neither too weak nor too strong. And in fact, such region does exist. And what happens here is that if we restrict ourselves to the case of homogeneous superconductor, it appears to be the so-called gapless superconductor. That could be easily understood from this very simple picture, the dispersion relations of the low-energy quasiparticles. The solid line here would be the dispersion relation for the normal quark matter. That's the first case. The dashed line would be the case when you have usual superconductor. and the dashed lower line will be the gapless superconductor. So if you look at this other dashed line, you would see that it kind of resembles both of them. It has some kind of structure here in the middle, like the pairing, the usual superconductor, but it does have these gapless excitations there, and of course, you are kind of in the middle of the game. You don't really know if this is normal or superconducting state. So it does seem to have very interesting properties, but it is flawed. It has really very serious problem too. And the problem comes from the fact when you, from the calculation of the screening masses of the gluons in this case. That's what was done, and you would find something really surprising. The square Meissner masses are negative, which means that the Meissner screening masses themselves are imaginary. So that is the first indication that there is something really wrong with this case. And in fact, this region below 1 is precisely that gapless state. So all this gapless state from 0 to 1 is unstable. So there is this chromomagnetic instability for the gluons of for the 4 out of 8 gluons in the gapless region, and even it expands a little bit to the case where you don't have this gapless state, kind of usual superconductor, yet it still has this problem for a while. In fact, it happens, this calculation I did mention was done for the two-flavor case, but it's really a universal statement. It's basically the same problem in the three flavors, and in fact, it seems to be more general. It even extends to similar phases in atomic gases. So this is really a serious problem, and one has to deal with it.
But in atomic case, do we have magnetic field?
No, we don't have magnetic field. We have what is called the current spontaneous current generation. It's just the kind of like a baryon charge currents. They will be spontaneously generated, yes. You simply calculate the correlator for the currents, essentially. And when you see that, it's a problem. Now, I kind of convinced you that there were only three cases. And the third one, which was most interesting, was really a problem. So where are we? How can we avoid this? And the thing is that we cannot easily avoid. In fact, there is what I would like to call no-go theorem, which says that basically you cannot avoid stress bearing in such systems. What was done in this paper by Andreas and Krishna is that they considered all possible patterns of Cooper pairings. So basically, here you could think of taking this each point as a given type of the quark. Of course, here there are all 9, 3 flavors, 3 colors, and each line represents something like a pairing direction. So you could think of this as a 9x9 matrix, and each line represents a given quark pairing, two quark pairing. In fact, with this simple graph, they could analyze all possible patterns using graph theory, and in fact, they found really a lot of those. And this even includes those very simple phases that I already discussed. So this would be, for example, CFL phase. You could also construct the graph for the 2SC phase. So it's really all possible patterns you could imagine. And their conclusion was that none of them is free of stress. So what does it mean? We have that situation, we really cannot avoid the stress, yet we cannot find the ground state. So that was a real big puzzle. And the main outcome of that seems to be that you cannot accommodate the stress without making some breaking of the Lorentz symmetry, or at least rotational symmetry in this case, because Lorentz is broken by the presence of the density. Sorry?
Or inhomogeneous
phases, yes. So this is one of the possibilities for the ground state. When you do have different Fermi surfaces, you don't try to fit them precisely into one another. In fact, you are trying to pair only limited regions on those Fermi spheres, and then because of that you get a Cooper pair with a finite total momentum, and this will be nothing else but a crystalline phase, or the Larkin Ovchinnikov-Hildebrandt phase, in which case you get the crystal made of the order parameter. So you would have the order parameter basically oscillating. There will be nodes where the order parameter goes to zero, but in the end, this might be the ground state. And in fact, recently there was quite a bit of progress in this direction to create the corresponding crystalline phase, which also satisfies the condition of neutrality and beta equilibrium. Previously, the original papers didn't really pay too much attention to that. Now it becomes a serious problem, and in fact, this has to be analyzed in detail. I would say that this is really one of the prime candidates, but it's definitely not the only one. The other possibility is to get some additional condensates in the ground state. And actually, this was pushing a lot by several people. Actually, I'm sorry, I couldn't really fit all the relevant references. I just put some key papers where you could find some more information. So the baryon, the spectrum of the CFA phase, and in fact, this was mostly done only for the three-flavor case, because that is the case where we have the spectrum of the quasi-particles, which resemble a lot the spectrum of the particles in vacuum QC. So you could talk about the baryons, the mesons in that phase almost in the same way as in vacuum QCD. And you have a gauge invariant description of those, and you could talk about different particles. So roughly speaking, you have all the particles as in vacuum QCD. When you don't have mismatch, actually that is played by the strange bulk mass, as it might be easy to understand, when you introduce the mismatch in the game, the masses of different mesons, in this case, actually, sorry, this is the baryons in the system, they would start to split. When the mismatch reaches some critical value, you get the zero mass. Actually, that is nothing else but the appearance of this gapless phase. The appearance of this gapless phase is avoided by the appearance of the condensates in the system. In fact, there are two stages here happening. There is this kink in the masses. That's the place where the K0 condensate happens. So first you get the condensate, the scalar condensate, S-wave condensate in the second order phase transition. And then later when you reach the, actually I think it should be, no, no, sorry, I think it's right. This dashed line was the mass of the excitation without this first phase transition. So now when you had this first phase transition, of course you had to follow not the dashed line but the green line, but still you are getting basically to the same point. The gapless phase seems unavoidable. And what is suggested that there you get additional condensate, but this time it will be a P-wave condensate, and you get a first-order phase transition there. Yet, this doesn't seem to be the end of the story, because as was shown recently, there is still some minor problems existing there. There is some instability left. The other alternative that was actually already presented in the first day of this workshop is the so-called gluonic phase. So I want you to remember this point where inside the usual, what I was calling the usual superconductor, there were no gapless excitations there yet, there was already a problem with one of the, actually four of the gluons. They were having tachyonic screening mass below the square root of two value in terms of that parameter. And then the idea was relatively simple. If you have some soft mold, just go there, construct the Ginzburg-Landau theory, and analyze it. So that's precisely what was done in a series of papers, let's say this one. You go precisely to that point and write your Ginzburg-Landau theory and see what happens. So this was the condensate, the so-called gluonic condensate that appears in the ground state, and it does seem to resolve the problem. So this is yet another possibility. It has some interesting symmetry properties, and in fact, there doesn't seem to be exist just a single phase. There are many, many different possibilities. Some of those have been discussed in the recent paper. So again, this is something that might appear in the ground state, but of course, you should have noticed that first I was talking about the one possibility in the three-flavor case. This is the possibility in the two-flavor case. And in fact, even in those cases, there could be some crosstalk that something similar like this appears in the other phase, or the first one appears here. There was another suggestion also recently, the so-called paramagnetic phases. So the idea is, again, basically to go to that point, square root of 2, where the problem was appearing for the first time in the two-flavor case, and see what it might mean if you have the spontaneous generation of the ordinary magnetic field. And in fact, that is a very attractive idea, because we do know that the neutron stars have magnetic fields. And of course, some of them might have extremely huge magnetic fields on the order of 10 to 16 Tesla, the so-called magnetars. In that case, this mechanism, which basically states the spontaneous generation of the ordinary magnetic field, would be a simple possibility to explain the appearance of magnetars.
Into the 16 Gauss.
Oh, yeah, Gauss. What did I say?
Tesla.
Well, it's the same. Yeah, here it will be 10 to 14. Oh, yes.
16 in the surface. Right?
Yeah, this is actually for the interior magnetic field.
If you go to the interior, that's a possibility.
Yeah, you're right. First of all, I meant to say Gauss, but.
But in order to fix instabilities, these are still peanuts, right? The real instability was the color magnetic field.
Well, actually, this is related to that. What it says here, that when you stabilize that chromomagnetic instability, you don't just get some gluon condensate, but in fact, you get also magnetic condensates, real magnetic condensates.
Yeah, but then there are some orders of magnitude higher than this.
No. That's basically the orders of magnitude plane. And notice that this is soft point, where basically you could fine-tune even arbitrarily small fields. So in fact, it is... Yes, but that's exactly what I'm saying. It's a viable possibility, too.
But why is the latest an object? Because you don't have that superconductor, right? It's supposed to be uniform.
Well, the thing is, it cannot be homogeneous in this phase. It must be like a precursor vortex state.
Must be a precursor,
yes.
Even without superconductor.
No, here there is superconductor to start with. It's not electromagnetic superconductor, yes, but...
Magnetic, the usual magnetic.
Right. But the thing is, it's a little more complicated because it's driven by the appearance of first chromomagnetic fields, which in turn induce the ordinary magnetic fields.
Which is not superconducting.
Which is not a superconducting, but because of the state where you play, it must be inhomogeneous. And in fact, there will be a talk later today where you would hear more details about it.
I'm trying to understand. Inhomogeneous, but not a precursor
vortex. Most likely a precursor vortex.
Yeah, a precursor vortex.
Yeah. But again, maybe I should simply ask you to wait until the talk later today. That's where it will be discussed.
Precursor vortexes correspond to excited states. It was not a ground state there, right? Because ground state would be still without any magnetic field in the case. You're talking about ground state.
It's really ground state.
Yeah.
But it's inhomogeneous ground state.
The problem here is that we are dealing with a spin one charged field.
That's the difference.
You have a spin one charged field, you have the anomalous magnetic moment, and you have a totally different phenomenology.
It's not exactly the same physics as before, so you're right, yes. Yeah. But actually, we are talking about the ground state here.
Could become unstable due to quantum energy? Well, you have in mind perhaps the problem with the chromomagnetic or the SN, and this is another case.
Again, I just simply ask you to wait a little bit longer. There will be a talk today. So I'll try to continue anyway. So another alternative possibility is the mixed phase. In a way, this is something which you might want to say to be the first possibility to imaginable. So what is the mixed phase? It's basically, you cannot get the normal phase, you cannot get the superconducting phase, so just take pieces of each in some proportions so that there will be slightly different densities in one piece, slightly lower densities in the other piece. There will be a charge distribution between them. One will be positively charged, the other one will be negatively charged, so that on average you have a neutral state, and this is not nothing else but the mixed phase. Here, in fact, when the density changes, you could have different proportion of different phases in that case. So that was one of the possibilities that was expressed, and in fact, you cannot simply take that mixed phase and be done with it. The problem is that when you create those bubbles of one phase emerge in the other, you have to take into account the surface tension effects, because that is energy price you have to pay for creating this phase. So that was an analysis, model analysis, of the surface tension in this kind of phases, and the results are presented by these dots in the as a function of chemical potential. The surface tension would be this function given by the dots. But it happens to be that this model calculation suggests that indeed you are sitting in the mixed phase. Everything green means that the mixed phase is preferable, and it's also relatively easy to understand. If the surface tension is small, it doesn't cost you much energy to create the mixed phase. If the surface tension is large, of course that will be forbidden. And that was the suggestion that indeed mixed phase seems to be correct. The problem is that unfortunately the size of those bubbles that you would have in the phase are typically of the same order or even less than the device screening mass. And of course when you do not take carefully the screening effects into account, you are going to fail, and this might be really a very large underestimation of the actual surface tension when you take the screening effects into account. So actually there is still more development necessary. So those were roughly the main ideas that we have right now in the field. In fact, there are several others which I simply didn't include in the discussion simply because they seem to be less likely from my personal point of view, but actually there are some possibilities out there. One of them, for example, is the solid quark matter, as suggested by some authors, or ferromagnetic states. Now, the actual phenomenological way to resolve the problem is really to try to find the observational signatures of many different possible phases, and then see if those are confirmed by the observational data. So what kind of tools do we have to explore the phase diagram? Well, one of the very simple ways of considering is to consider the cooling of neutron stars. And in fact, that will be extremely sensitive to the phases of quark matter, because this is essentially the emission, which is very sensitive, emission of neutrinos, which is very sensitive to the low-energy quasar particles in the system. The only problem right now is that we have very, very few data for the stars, and most of them are very uncertain. So they do give us some general ideas, but in fact they are not so constraining as of now. I think
every theory has exactly one star, which confirms.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, you could see basically these are all the points there are there. We do know something like 2,000 pulsars, but unfortunately, for most of them, all this information is unavailable. We need to know the age of the star and the surface temperature. And even this is not everything, because we also need to model the actual cooling phenomenon, which gives you this surface temperature. There are a lot of uncertainties, but of course, the progress could be made. There are some specific features that are happening in stars and might be related to the properties of quark matter. For example, the glitches. What are those? It's basically when you consider the change of the angular velocity of the star with time. Of course, it decreases because of the radiation. But once in a while, you see this jump, sudden jumps in the angular velocity. Those are the so-called glitches when the structure of the angular of the distribution of the angular momentum inside the star is suddenly rearranged, and you have a sudden increase of the angular velocity. This is like a figure skating type of effect. And actually, that might be related to the properties of some quark matter phases, and in some cases, it might shed some light on the properties of matter. There are some other properties which are sensitive to the bulk viscosity and shear viscosity in the star, and this is the so-called R-mode instabilities. The R-mode instabilities are this kind of collective motion of the matter on the star, when you have something like a differential type of motion on the surface of the star. And if this has a quadrupole moment, of course, there will be gravitational waves. But not only that, if the viscosity of the star is very low, these modes tend to grow as you emit gravitational waves. So that is the signal of instability. And the only way to suppress that instability is to crank up the bulk viscosity or to lose sufficiently enough energy with the gravitational radiation and then do the rearrangement inside the star to slow down the rotation. So if you calculate the bulk and shear viscosity, you could actually say which regions in the temperature angular velocity plane are forbidden, and then see if you find any stars in that region. If you find something there, it means it's not really unstable, and you have to change your model. So that should also give you some constraints on the properties of matter. You could consider some magnetic properties, for example, the magnetars. You could consider some transient signals from the protoneutron stars, like the flux of neutrinos. Of course, right now, we are not able to detect the flux of neutrinos from supernovas very precisely. But if the star would explode somewhere not too far, and the flux is much larger than we have, say from 1987A supernova, we might have a chance to detect a precise profile of the flux of neutrinos and compare that to some properties suggested by color superconductivity, for example. So where should it go? Well, one way, strange, actually this slide was supposed to be after this. Okay. One way to improve our situation is to actually go to consider different phases of quark matter and concentrate specifically on the transport properties. Those transport properties are most sensitive to the change of the low energy dynamics in the system. And that is basically something which is extremely strongly affected by the possible superconductivity. You could consider different properties, heat, electrical conductivities, all of them determine some physical properties of the stars. This is related to cooling, this is to the decay of the magnetic field. You could consider viscosities in different phases. As I said, they are related to the R-mode instabilities, different types of mean free path for neutrinos, for the photons. They could have different effects on the this transient behavior, like the emission of the neutrinos from the protoneutron stars. They could have some relevance also even to the cooling of the stars. You could consider some other properties. And in fact, some phases have already been analyzed and some transport properties are known. But there is still a lot we have to learn about those inhomogeneous phases and how they would give an observable signal from the stars. The thermodynamic properties, which I should have mentioned before, are less sensitive, of course, to the change of the low energy properties inside the star. Essentially, the reason is that all these phenomena, they are just modifying the few states at the surface of the Fermi sphere, and they don't really go deeply below this Fermi sphere. As a result, most of the thermodynamic properties, they are not really strongly affected, although there are some arguments that it might be not completely correct statement either. But there are some other thermodynamic properties like specific heat. In fact, it is kind of like a transport property in that sense that it is sensitive specifically to the low energy excitations. And this could have really strong effects on the properties of the neutron stars. So this is one of the examples where it was suggested that one of those gapless phases will behave as a hot water bottle, which means it has so much specific heat it would not cool for very, very old ages. The problem is that they were considering the gapless phase, which is we know now is unstable. But there could be those inhomogeneous phases which do share this property of the specific heat, and then we do have a chance to see this from the cooling. Well, there is another possible detour for the starting of this kind of system is to really go and create an appropriate tabletop experiment. And what I mean by that there are some common properties shared between the properties of the compact star, the quark matter in compact stars, and the cold gas of fermionic atoms, such as lithium 6 and potassium 40. In fact, some of the experiments have already been done, and this is the pictures from the Kettler's group, and they could change the system. They could actually control the coupling constant in a way by changing the magnetic field, and you could go to different regimes, and in that way, probably attune to the regime which is most appropriate for the quark matter. Of course, there are very important differences too. For example, we don't have the corresponding gauge field like the gluons, so it's a system not exactly the same as quark matter, but there is a chance that we could learn something from this simpler example and then try to translate that to the physics of compact stars.
What are those splotches on the right? Is there a lattice in there?
Yes, actually. What is done here, they are considering two different regimes. Let's say the first regime is the weakly coupled regime when you have the strongly coupled regime where you have the both the Einstein condensate of the pairs of the particles. And what they do, they create a blob of this superfluid system. Then they shoot two laser pulses and rotate it, give the angular momentum to this system. And then they project out the system and analyze the spectrum, and they see essentially the abrikosa of vertices in the superfluid medium. In some cases, like here, for example, you could probably see, I'm not sure if you could see it well, there is some central blob where you do have those vertices, and there is a halo around where you don't have that. So this is because we have a mixture of two different species of the atoms with different number density. So there is something like you would call maybe mixed phase that I discussed earlier.
Right. That should give very big support to mixed phase.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, again,
this is not a mixed phase. The mixed phase in this system, of course, is just a wall. On the other side is another pure phase, which is the normal phase.
Yeah, it's not a mixed phase. It's separation of phases.
Separation of phases.
Yes,
exactly.
But if you...
But again, apparently, even this statement is debated, so I wouldn't really just put my finger on this and say this is the end of the story. So this brings me basically to the conclusion, and it's very simple. I'm not even sure I want to repeat everything. The bottom line here is that there is a chance, of course we don't really know for sure, there is a chance that the highest density region in stars have quark matter, and that quark matter might have really complicated phase diagram because of the specific conditions under which the matter exists, the beta equilibrium neutrality, those that I highlighted. If we do have such quark matter, most likely it is in some sort of unconventional phases, and unconventional, by that I mean that this is some kind of special type of phases where you have some inhomogeneities or broken Lorentz symmetry, rotational symmetry, and there is a chance that we could study that by extracting the information from the observable data. This observational data, of course, then could be used to really constrain the possibilities for those phases, and of course, even lead to the actual discovery of quark matter. So this is it. Thank you.
Questions? So what do you think the likelihood is of being able to reproduce any kind of complicated phase diagram at large number of colors?
I probably should ask that question from you. Because I don't really know if, well, I hear from other people that you could have some possibility to model chemical potential in some ways in ABS-CFT. But of course, I'm kind of ignorant to the extent to which you could go. And apparently, you cannot really go far, as I understood from some people.
I guess I just ask, from this point of view, it seems like the details are very sensitive to the number of flavors, the number of colors, and the mass.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, that is absolutely true. But then again, there are some kind of pure, the most symmetric, the most beautiful phases, and I don't see any reason why those, the most symmetric things cannot be easily tracked. But again, it's basically about the techniques that you are using. If you could apply any, at least any of those, to something like this, it would be already a big break.
Try to make partially answer your question. The at large NC, the Cooper pairing is an effect, a phenomenon that is suppressed by NC. So
yeah.
you won't have Cooper conductivity.
Well,
there are other effects that intervene.
They had some critical value, of course, but then again, it's if you can extract something from the actual limit by expanding in one way, it's probably impossible because this is not a perturbative effect.
I don't really have a question. I want to repeat kind of bottom line. That there are many details depending on many details or flavors. That's not that important. What is important and, in this such is which way the nature will go. It may make anisotropic phases or phases with modulated delta, which is this log phase, or it may completely homogeneous phases like mixed phase. Yes? They couldn't decide even in the simplest model. All these details about electrostatic equilibrium, etc., are details in total.
But how sensitive, I think the key question is how sensitive is that to the
we don't know how sensitive.
Well, larger limit does not have superconductivity, as Sean was saying. As Sean was trying to say, at large NC you don't have color superconductivity. You have a completely different type of pairing. It has nothing to do with superconductivity, and apparently because of that you cannot even do this superconductivity by expanding in one of NC. Because it's really non-perturbative.
You have crystallization.
Yeah.
And crystallization is one more direction, by the way, which you didn't mention, but it can also be a possibility.
Crystallization I mentioned, but I said I didn't have the slide for
that. The basic issues are not settled, yes? It's not a question of details.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And I think that that to relate the such a phase dark phase structure to the internal observation phase pollution. And actually, so you mentioned that the glitches and also the cooling phenomena could be the clue to the identify Hartzian coronal.
Right.
But actually, we have also the rich possible phase structure even in hadronic phase. For example, meson condensation, ion and kaon condensation,
right.
And also in even in lower density, you have triplet P2 superconductivity of neutrons, matter, and also singlet SO,
right.
And which they all contribute or affect to the cooling phenomena and also glitches. So
right.
The point is that how could we distinguish such a hadronic scenario and those cold scenarios?
It will not be very easy, but in fact it's not impossible either. The reason is that some of the things, for example cooling, it's dominated usually by the highest density states, typically. The reason is that, for example, if you take simply normal phase, the emission of neutrinos will be highly sensitive to the highest density regions, because that's where the regions the emission will be many, many orders of magnitude larger. So even if you have only like the core only 1 in 100 fraction of the whole star, it may be that because of this many orders of magnitude increased emissivity, it will easily dominate the cooling of the whole star. So the hottest core, the center, will be basically draining all the energy. All the energy will flow to the center, and it's emitted by neutrinos from there. Let's say if the emissivity from the center will be 3 orders of magnitude higher, as, for example, the direct Urca process is safe compared to the indirect. Then also, if you consider pairing phenomena in nuclear matter, typically the order of magnitude for the gaps will be tiny compared to the quark phases. Then again, the effects will be many orders of magnitude larger in a different direction. If you take the extreme case of the CFL, this three-flavor color superconducting star, as a strange star basically without any layers outside, it will be cooled basically either immediately right away because of high emissivity, or it will be cooled for a long time due to some suppressed mechanism of emissivity. But the total thermal energy in the star will be so tiny that no matter what, it will always remain a very dim object. And if you have some object, isolated neutron stars that are very dim, let's say very soon after they appear for the first time, there will be very good signal for the fact that everything is strongly paired and there is absolutely no room for the cooling of that object. That will be very good sign for the color flavor locked compact star. But of course, it's not always that clear-cut difference. You have to work hard to find these cases.
Good. I think that's the speaker again.